This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Tom Luginbill joins us now from ESPN to talk a little college football. Tom, how you doing, man?
Good morning, boys.
What's up? You all right?
Oh, I'm fantastic, dude. I'm living the dream. I'm sitting here watching quarterbacks in the 2021 class that don't even have any hair under their arms yet. So, of course, I have no chance of being right on projecting any of them.
Well, then why are you doing it? Somebody told you to?
Because I get paid this certain amount of compensation to provide intel to various clients throughout the landscape of college football in regards to the up-and-coming next group of players. And to be honest with you, I mean, I joke and it's tongue-in-cheek, but this thing's become so rapid. It has become so accelerated. And, you know, not everybody's Alabama. Not everybody's Ohio State. Not everybody is staffed to be able to go out and provide intel on the 2020, the 2021, even the 2022 class for their schools. So what me and a couple of my podnas did is we got together and said, hey, how can we close the loop here and create a little bit of a business model? And that's what we've done.
ESPN's Tom Luginbill is with us. Follow him on Twitter for thoughts on all of that, at Tom Luginbill, at Tom Luginbill on Twitter. Look, this is a team that is probably, they're not a contender, I don't think, in the Pac-12. Is Wilton Spate a good fit for Chip Kelly's offense?
Well, first and foremost, he's a better athlete than people give him credit for because he's such a big kid. And in fairness to Wilton Spate, when he was healthy and playing football for Michigan, they were pretty good on offense. You know, he had really shown some flashes. He won the job outright when a lot of people didn't think that he was going to. I think that he'll be fantastic in the passing game if he ends up being a guy for them. And it'll be interesting to see. I don't know. Well, first of all, there are no contenders in the Pac-12. I can tell you that right now. So I don't know. Is it the ideal long-term fit for ideally what they want to be at UCLA on offense? Probably not. Is it an experienced stopgap with a guy that's played a lot of meaningful downs that could maybe get you over the hump while you try and revamp and rebuild the defensive side of the football? Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that.
Now, no contenders in the Pac-12. Was that tongue-in-cheek too there, Mr. Superman? Or are you saying Auburn is that much better than Washington in the opener? We shouldn't even worry about that game.
Well, first of all, you got to worry about every game because you still got to play them. But when I say that, you know, I had our broadcast crew had three games last year that included a Pac-12 team. All right, all three of the games either had Washington or USC. Now they're supposed to be the premier of that league, right? When we went and we saw USC, they were so average in almost every position across the board, outside of quarterback and running back. It was stunning. That's what stood out first and foremost. And then I happened to broadcast, and me and McElroy and Dave Pash broadcasted the Fiesta Bowl. And it was stunning how much better Penn State was than Washington. Stunning. Now, that score should have been way worse than it ended up being. And so I'm very, very concerned about the Pac-12's viability. I think they have a lot of the same problems that the Big 12 has. If you can't put any semblance of defense onto the field that has depth, that is loaded in the front end, then you're going to struggle to compete for a championship or even have an opportunity to get into a college football playoff berth, and that's the position that the Pac-12 finds itself in right now.
ESPN's Tom Luginbill. Kyler Murray decided not to play summer baseball. How big a deal is that for Oklahoma?
I got to be honest with you guys. I think it's the biggest storyline going into this fall.
Wow.
Because, you know, this kid is tearing the cover off the ball. He's probably the fastest player in major college baseball right now. I know he's probably the fastest player on Oklahoma's football team. He is a really, really gifted baseball player, so much so that Some of my sources tell me that if he had relayed to the baseball powers that be that he was ready to commit to baseball and that he would move forward, that there was no question he would be a first-round draft choice. So if you're Oklahoma, you're Lincoln Riley, you're an Oklahoma fan, this is very, very concerning, because when you look at Kyler Murray, and I think I've said this with you guys on this program before, if Kyler Murray would have been 6'2 or 6'3, you know, in your normal range of what an ideal measurable standard is for the quarterback position, without question, he's probably the most gifted player with all the different traits that we've done in the almost 13 years I've been doing this at ESPN. But the reality is he's 5'10". So when you start looking at this through Kyler Murray's eyes, where is your bread butter? Yeah, could you be a great player in major college football? Could you be an All-American? Could you maybe get your team to a national championship? Sure. Can you play in the NFL for 15 years? I don't know. But I know that you can do that in baseball. And so I think that this is going to be an intriguing storyline to continue to track as a college football fan and if you're an Oklahoma fan, because Kyler Murray is very, very gifted. And you remove him from the quarterback race at Oklahoma, now you go down to Tanner Mordecai, you go down to Austin Kelly, I can't remember. Anyway, you go to those guys, and they haven't played a single snap of ball. And so I think it's a very, very serious situation we got to track.
Well, if you go Mordecai, you're digging deep there, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're going true freshman. And I think that the kid has a lot to think through. Oklahoma's obviously had to be prepared for this. Probably didn't anticipate the type of season he was going to have on the diamond this spring. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing unfolds.
Will Greer in West Virginia launched a Heisman campaign over the weekend. Is he the best quarterback in that conference in the Big 12?
Yeah, I think he probably is. You know, I think you're always asking for trouble when you publicly launch a Heisman campaign. I really believe that. I think you let those things play out, because what you then create is you create an entire couple of months leading up to the season before a game is even played of distraction and hype and exposure to one individual. And what type of impact does that have on your team and your locker room? I just think it's always a dangerous proposition. Listen, he's a very gifted guy in an ideal offensive set. You could probably make the argument that if he doesn't screw up at Florida, Jim McElwain's still the head coach there. And so, you know, I think, yeah, in that conference, loaded full of good quarterback play, I think going into the season, he's probably the best guy.
How much of it do you think is recruiting, though, Lugs, that now Dana Holgorsen and West Virginia can tell players? Because, look, I mean, they're not going to get high-level recruits versus an Oklahoma or a Texas in that conference. I mean, how much of it is – look, hey, you come here, we'll do everything we can to make you a Heisman Trophy winner. We'll promote you. I mean, is that a recruiting move for them?
It may be. I think that, you know, the offensive system, Dana Holgorsen's background in that system is probably the greatest recruiting tool. Now, if you win the Heisman Trophy, that's a whole different discussion. You know, I've always felt, and I don't want to go off track here, but I think that one of the biggest challenges for West Virginia is the fact that they joined the Big 12 and not the ACC.
100%.
They belong in the ACC, and Louisville belongs in the Big 12. And so, you know, you already have inherent challenges there. So I understand what they're doing. I just think it's always a risky proposition. West Virginia is one of those teams that, and I actually respect West Virginia an awful lot for this one reason. Their defensive coordinator, Tony Gibson, he has totally embraced and realized the reality of the conference. And I think he and Dana Holgorsen have gotten together and said, you know what, we're going to be in a track meet every week. So if we're going to be in a track meet, let's blitz the heck out of people. Let's play man-to-man defense. And you know what, we might give up some plays, but we're going to create some plays too. And if that means we create a turnover or two per game, that gets us on the field offensively and it gives us a chance in this conference. And so defensively, they've taken an approach that I totally agree with in relationship to what they're dealing with week in and week out in that conference.
Lugs, we're 87 days away from that first Thursday night of college football. And it's not a very good Thursday night, but probably the best game is Purdue-Northwestern. That could be an entertaining game. Cody wants us to ask you if Jeff Brohm can follow up what he did last year. Is Purdue a team to follow this year? Do you think they can be entertaining?
Yeah, I do think they'll be entertaining because they're going to be good on offense. They're a little bit of a salty group on defense. They're probably more stout than they're given credit for, particularly in their defensive front. But offensively, every time Jeff Brohm's teams have taken the field with a year of experience behind them, they get better, and then the next year they get better. And so I'm anticipating them being a challenging team to deal with on offense. And listen, that's one of those programs that if you do it there and you can sustain it for a couple of years and you can get bowl eligible, maybe then you go from 6 wins to 7 wins or somehow get to 8 wins, you know, it earns you an opportunity at some other places. Let's not forget that a year ago this was a Power 5 program that didn't have lights on their stadium.
Wow.
Now think about that, okay? So, you know, that and you know what? They're playing another program that doesn't either, in Northwestern. They bring lights in when they play a night game to Evanston, and I'm not kidding about that. So, but I'll say this, that's going to be a tough challenge because I think that quarterback in Northwestern, Clayton Thorson, is really, really good, and you're playing against one of the most well-coached football teams you're going to find in all college football in Northwestern.
A portable lighting company there in the Midwest used to do it for Marco. Michigan. Yeah, used to do Marco. It for Michigan and Notre Dame too, right? Eventually they're going to go out of business.
Man. Yeah, they used to do that on our high school broadcast, man. They bring the thing in because the high school stadium lights don't illuminate enough for TV, and they bring them in and put them on top of us.
Hey, Virginia Tech loses two corners that were supposed to be starters over the weekend, Jeremy Webb, an Achilles injury, and then Adonis Alexander, academics. Was Virginia Tech expected to be contending for a division championship? What does that do for Miami's path now?
Well, absolutely they were. Now, obviously, you lose two first-rounders off of that defense, but you also returned a lot of components that got significant experience. I think anytime you lose a corner and a guy in Adonis Williams, I think he started, 34 games for them. Looks like he's going to enter the supplemental draft. I think anytime you have a loss like that, particularly on the perimeter, when you're a team that likes to play man-to-man defense, that's a challenge. Listen, I think that they're going to be better than they were a year ago quarterback. I think that what we saw from Josh Jackson may just be the tip of the iceberg, and I'd say the same thing about Justin Fuente that I'd say about Jeff Brohm. I think each and every year you're going to see him get better and better on offense. So maybe early on, I know obviously they got to take on Florida State early on, but you kind of ride the offense a little bit while you find your pieces of the puzzle to get into place on defense. So we'll see. Everybody is high on Miami, and I understand that. You've got those three great linebackers. You've got some people back, some components. But two areas for me, I think they still have to make considerable improvement in the offensive line. And I'm not convinced that Malik Rozier is a difference maker. I think Malik Rozier this year needs to prove that he's a guy that Miami wins because of, not in spite of.
Where college football never ends.
The kick is good! Auburn wins! 22-19! The Auburn Tigers are on top of the college football world.
The Jocks Roundtable with LT, Dunaway, and Brown.